Hello and welcome to the Scottish Clans podcast. I'm Clint Edwards and I appreciate you joining me today. Boy, it has been a crazy couple of weeks here in the United States and probably all over the world, although most of the news that I've been paying attention to lately has been focused here in the United States. Speaking of current events and things that are going on, I did have some interesting listener feedback, and I won't say exactly who it was from or what. It was on a Facebook page, one of the several that I share my episodes on, and it was somebody said more or less the idea of the response was, yeah, it went pretty good until he started getting off in the weeds, and then it just went downhill from there. And I, you know, usually when people have a criticism about the podcast, I try to ask specifically where, you know, what was it exactly that I said that was wrong or that you disagreed with, and let's figure out where the problem is, and if it's something that I can fix, I want to fix it. I don't claim to be omniscient regarding the Scottish clans and or any other subject. And what I want to do with this podcast, as I've said many times before, is I want to start a dialogue and let's discuss something that we're interested in, and I'll bring information to it. And if you can add to it, awesome. If you know more about a certain subject or part of the aspect of the history of the Scottish clans than I do, please jump in. If I got something drastically wrong or was, or maybe I was a little bit off, but if you looked at it the wrong way, you'd get the wrong impression and you'd have a wrong understanding of the history, then yeah, let me know. And so I said, yeah, what exactly did I get wrong? And this response said, well, you just started to get political and after that, it ruined your argument. And I asked, what argument did it ruin? And he didn't respond. And I'm not, like, once again, I'm not saying exactly who, because it's not my point here to just reach out and crush somebody. But I do think it creates a good opportunity for me to establish something with this podcast on where I would like to be in the discussion between me and the listeners and with you guys between each other. And he never responded, but what I understood him to really be saying was, you started to make political comments and that destroyed your credibility, or at least his desire to listen to anything further after that, which I get. And I was trying to think of what part of the last podcast. Now, I'm not going to go back and listen to the whole podcast, pinpoint exactly where it was, but I think I remember that I was talking about how it was unfortunate, how I maybe have got off on a tangent, which, you know, occasionally I do. But I may have, if I remember correctly, it may be the spot where I was talking about how unfortunate it is that what is the by far the largest body of activity that we see people engaged in as a clan, as a kin group, because they are related to each other, either really or because they think they are related to each other. What activity is that? Overwhelmingly, it's violence. It's clan feuds. It's going to war. It's either like on a full-scale battlefield or it's played out in the streets of Edinburgh or Glasgow or other type places at that full spectrum, but it's a violent conflict that where we see these kin groups acting as such, the majority of it. I gave other examples on there, but that was it. And so, and I talked about, I think maybe then I started talking about the use of force and I can't remember everything. Here's what I'm not going to do on this podcast. I am not going to walk on eggshells with the words that I use. Here's what I want to establish here. Let me just start off by saying this. I've mentioned my religious convictions on here before. Now I don't believe that I have used this podcast as a platform for proselyting. I also have not used this podcast as a platform to convince you that my political views are better than yours and that you need to come over to mine. But sometimes I do mention religion, and sometimes I do mention politics. I try to keep it within the realm of principles rather than in very specific incidents or my reaction to those things. So just to make it clear, as a Latter-day Saint, which those of you who've been listening to this for a long time know, because I've mentioned it before, that I'm a Latter-day Saint. I'm an active, practicing Latter-day Saint. And as such, here's what I believe. I believe in a God, the Eternal Father. I believe that Jesus Christ is His Son and my Savior and Redeemer. And that my capacity to return to that Heavenly Father someday is made possible through the atonement of Jesus Christ. And as I have that belief, I believe that every person on the earth is a son or daughter of that same Heavenly Father. I believe that that Heavenly Father and His Son Jesus Christ love every single person on this earth. They are all His sons and His daughters. God so loved the world that He sent His only begotten Son. That's what I believe. And I'm not bringing that up so that I can convince you to believe like I do. I am very comfortable with you believing different than me, either being of a religious persuasion that's different than mine or completely distancing yourself from any type of organized religion. Atheists, whatever. You come to this podcast because you want to talk about Scottish clans or listen to it or engage in the conversation in some form. But here's another thing. So I believe that. I believe that Heavenly Father loves every single person regardless of regardless. He loves every single person on the earth. And that if I claim to love Him back in my flawed, imperfect way, that it would be inconsistent of me to not at least, we all know there's people that are hard to love. But I believe that I should love, as a disciple of Christ, I should love every single person that's out there, regardless of their background. That's what I believe. I also strongly believe in freedom. And I know that some of you out there who are maybe of one particular political leaning might believe that the Founding Fathers were not good men and that the Constitution of the United States, which is the foundation of the country, is not a good system. I believe in your freedom to hold that belief. I just want you guys to know that. Freedom is important to me. So without getting too into the weeds, to use this gentleman's words, that's what I believe. And I am not going to create a podcast that has the atmosphere of me having to walk on eggshells. If you don't believe the same as me politically, tune in and let's talk about podcasts. If it bothers you so much that I am a person of faith, or that I love freedom to the degree that I do, if you cannot handle that and it completely ruins the whole rest of the conversation, then go ahead and don't listen. I want to create an atmosphere on this podcast where we can all, where I was showing up to talk about a specific subject, and I don't want this podcast nor the Facebook group or other forms that we can interact with each other, I don't want that to drift away from that subject. If I wanted a political podcast, I'd do a political podcast, or a religious podcast, I'd do a religious podcast. And there's lots of good ones in both categories that are out there. This I created specifically so that I could nerd out with like-minded people. And if sometimes I get off on a tangent a little bit, bear with me. Love me as I seek to love all of you. And I promise the tangent won't last forever. Usually it comes back around. And in that case, if it's what I was thinking about in the previous episode, if that is, because he didn't tell me specifically, but if it's what I think it was, I didn't stay there forever. And what got me off on that tangent was a Scottish clans related thing, and I believe I was only out there for maybe 2 minutes and brought it back in. So hopefully it's okay with you if I feel different than you do, because it is okay with me if you feel different than me. And there was difference amongst the Highlanders. And that's one theme that's run consistent throughout this, is we've seen that it wasn't tidy. All of the Highlanders didn't join Bonnie Prince Charlie. And all of the Lowlanders, whatever generalizations we want to make about that, it's not that tidy. And people had, it was a very complex situation. And my own political and religious views are complex. And they're deep. But they're mine, and I hold them, and sometimes I will unwittingly break off on a little bit of a tangent here and there, and I hope it's okay with you, especially if my views are different. In fact, I had one correspondence with somebody else who showed the perfect example of this. It was several weeks ago. I mean, I would even say months ago. Somebody responded and said, "Hey, I think you and I lean different politically, but I can appreciate where you're coming from. And we both love to talk about Scottish clans," and he responded with what he had on his mind regarding Scottish clans. And we had a great interaction with each other. That's what I want. That would be the perfect example. I didn't have that exact dialogue ready to share with you. I didn't have it queued up and everything. But I want that type of a free interaction of ideas, and the fact that you and I can be different from each other, but we can come together on things that we're both crazy fascinated with, which is the Scottish clans. And that's all about I've got to say on that, is that's how I feel, and that's what kind of atmosphere I want to develop here. Okay, so welcome to Scottish Clans for Beginners Part 2. I'm excited to talk about this. Last episode, as a continuation of that episode, last time we discussed what is a Scottish clan? What does that word mean? We talked about linguistic origins of that, and what are some of the things we look for as a Scottish clan, and how does that defined, and what were they like? And today, we're going to go into the roots of that. I'm going to give you the historical context. I do not mean for this to be an all-inclusive. I'm going to deliberately try to stay out of the weeds, even regarding Scottish clans. I'm not talking about getting off on tangents. I'm going to try to not go into this subject too deeply because of, I want this to be a beginner conversation. So if you go back to the earlier episodes, the very beginning of this podcast, like the low number episodes, I have episodes back there they're starting off with the basic ethnic groups that formed Scotland, but I went into more detail. I talked about the Scots of Dalriada, the Picts, the Angles of Northumbria, the Britons of Strathclyde, the Vikings, the Normans. I talked about those different groups. And in some cases, they got their own episode because I did go into detail on them. Today, I'm going to try to kind of give it the Reader's Digest of those. And what I hope happens I know I'm covering some of the same material again, but I'm going to try to do it in a way that you can see the continuity and the historical picture emerge. And we're going to get into the time period where we see the clans that we would recognize today, where we see those coming about. I want to set the historical context for you because I believe that as you learn more information about the clans, you'll have context to plug it in, and that will help you remember things better. And as somebody who has spent quite a lot of my life, both formally in universities and informally on my own, researching history, that's how I remember stuff, as I develop a framework. And then when I get a new fact, it's not just some random fact bumping around in my brain. It's a fact that I can grab and I can plug it into a broader picture, and then it sticks better. So that's what I'm doing today. That's the goal. All right. We'll see how I do. Stay with me. Okay. So what we're going to start off by talking about is the different ethnic groups that formed Scotland and that the clans come out of. And one of these is going to be specifically or particularly important to the development of this aspect of Scottish culture. And especially as you think about terms that later scholars would use, the kin-based society. This is a pretty big part of that culture. All right. So I'm just going to start. Oh, by the way, to help you with today, I posted 3 different maps. You don't have to use all 3 of them, but I posted all of them in the Scottish Clans group on Facebook. And if you're like me and you listen to podcasts, mostly when you're doing things that I rarely just sit still while I'm listening to podcasts. I'm usually driving or off on a hike with my dog or doing chores or whatever, and I have it so I can keep moving, but I can keep learning at the same time. So if you're like me, it won't work out, but if you get a chance, sit down at Facebook and look at the map. And if you can, even if it is possible in your schedule, that you can look at those maps while you're listening to this, I believe it'll be immensely helpful. So, and I don't know how many of you that are listening to this, if you're a beginner, you probably can't summon up a mental image of a map of Scotland. So I'm going to try to explain this with that in mind. But I did post those maps for your benefit. All right, so to start with, we're going to start with where I'm confident this concept of clans comes out of. Once upon a time, in what the land is what is now called Scotland, but was not at this time, there were 4 different kingdoms. We're talking about the post-Roman era, so we're getting into the 500s, 600s, 700s, okay? There were 4, it wasn't just 4 kingdoms, it was 4 groups of people, 4 languages, 4 cultural entities that made up what is now Scotland. Don't worry, there's more coming, I haven't forgot about them, but I'm just starting off with these 4, all right? In the West, there was the kingdom of Dal Riada. And the inhabitants of that area were referred to by other people as Scots. When I say they're in Western Scotland, what I'm referring to specifically is the Western Highlands, Argyll, and the Southern Isles off of the west coast of Scotland that are referred to as the Hebrides. Okay? If you go to those maps, it shows this territory very clearly. Now, these people spoke a language. The language that they spoke was an old form of Gaelic. And it was among these people that we first see the society organized into kindreds, into groups. Now, does that mean that the other groups didn't have them? No, it doesn't mean that, and I don't know for sure that they did or didn't. But we do have clear record of the Scots of the kingdom of Dal Riada being organized, especially on the higher levels of society, the ruling kindreds. And we are assuming that lower levels were also organized into kindreds, as later Scots would be. So these different kin groups were known by different names. We use the word clan today, and some people even get wrapped around the axle about what's the difference between a clan and a family and trying to draw rigid lines. In a kin-based society, if you have any kind of concept or idea that is really, really big in a certain society, you'll see the language that they speak more developed around that. If you have a seafaring culture, then you'll probably have more than 1 or 2 words for a sea vessel, a marine vessel. You'll probably have more than just a boat or a ship. If the culture is built around moving about on the water, there'll probably be all sorts of different words that describe subtly different types of boats and uses for the boats and all that. That's how the language was organized around kin structures within a Gaelic-speaking people. There have been different words used over the years. I'll give you 3 examples, and these are, well, the first one was the word clan for that word, go back. For more information on that, you can do a quick Wikipedia search or go back to the previous episode. There's a couple other words that we see in use amongst Gaelic-speaking people to describe kin groups. One is slíocht, which translates as roughly descendants. That's S-L-I-O-C-H-T. And another word that's more of a figurative word than clan or slíocht is síol, which is S-I-O-L. In Gaelic, when you have the I and the S next to each other, like the name Sinead, it also works with E's, like you see with Sean, when it's spelled the Irish way of S-E-A-N. Okay, so that's what's going on here. Síol, S-I-O-L, it means seed. So the seed of somebody, specifically, off the top of my head, one of the major Scottish clans that used this term quite a lot to refer to the divisions within the clan were the MacLeod clan. They were off the very far northwest, and they had two major branches of the clan, and even these branches had smaller branches off of them. But the two major divisions of the MacLeods were the MacLeods of Harris and Dunvegan, and the other branch were the MacLeods of Harris. The MacLeods of Harris were known as Síol Torkil, and the MacLeods of Harris and Dunvegan were known as Síol Tormod, two different ancestors within the MacLeod lineage. Okay, so that's just some examples. Well, if we go back to our ancient Scots of Dal Riada, the word they were using was the word canal. And so you had different kin groups within, different dominating kin groups within the kingdom of Dal Riada. You had canal Gabrain, and they held sometimes the throne of Dal Riada, the king over all of these different groups that made up this kingdom. And that would switch back and forth with one of the other kindreds, Canal Lorne. There were a couple of other major kindreds that are mentioned in the records of this ancient kingdom called Dal Riada. And these other two are Canal Nongusa, or the descendants of Angus. We'd call it in English today, we'd call it Angus. And then the last kindred was the Canal Comgall. Now, weird things happen in Gaelic with the M and the G, and they kind of go away in certain ways of pronouncing the language and certain developments within the language. And you see Canal Comgall represented today in the part of Scotland that's known as Cowal, C-O-W-A-L, Cowal. And there's another part of the what's now Scotland that you can see the names of these ancient kindreds in, and that's Lorne. There is still a district of Scotland that's known as Lorne, and that's after Canal Lorne. So Canal Lorne and Canal Gabrain would alternate, and I don't think it was tidy either. There's a lot of things that aren't tidy. I don't think it was each time the throne changed hands. It was back and forth. But you see those two kindreds alternating between being the kings of Dal Riada. I do know that in mentioning specific places where these different kindreds had their territory, if you're familiar at all with the geography of Scotland today, Kintyre was the possession of and kind of the headquarters of, maybe the heartland would be the best term, of Canal Gabrain. And the Canal Ongusa, they occupied the island of Isla, which would later years down the road be the, and I mean years and years and generations down the road, would be the Lord of the Isles, would have his seat there out of Isla. And Isla is an island off the west coast of Scotland. I'm trying to keep this super beginner. Isla is an island off the west coast of Scotland. Cowal is a peninsula in the western highlands that goes out into the ocean there. And the canal, and then Lorne is that the very bottom end of the Great Glen. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Great Glen, but most of you have heard of Loch Ness Monster. Well, Loch Ness, or the Lake of Ness, in Scotland is part of the Great Glen. If you look at a geographical, one of those maps I posted on the Facebook group was as a topographical, as you can see the terrain of Scotland. And you can see how the Great Glen just cuts right through the highlands. It forms a diagonal line that goes from the southwest to the northeast. And so Loch Ness is within that. I think it's a huge fault line, actually. I might be wrong on that, but I think it's a huge fault line. Anyway, Lorne is at the southwest end of the Great Glen before it opens up and goes out into the ocean. Okay, so those are just some of the place names within what was Dal Riata, and that's where we see the first mention of kin groups and a kin-based society there. All right, so if any of you know where Glasgow is, Glasgow would fall where it is today if we were to go back in time period, this same time period, the same dates that I gave earlier. That would be part of the Kingdom of Strathclyde. Now, it wasn't the kingdom. It wasn't the capital or the seat of power for the Kingdom of Strathclyde. That was at Clyde Rock, near Dumbarton. Dumbarton, if we take it back to the original linguistic origin of it, means Fort of the Britons. The Britons of Strathclyde, the Strathclyde Britons, they also spoke a Celtic language. Gaelic is a Celtic language. There's two different sides of the family within the Celtic languages, especially as we look at them today. If you were to go back to Roman times and earlier, there's a lot more to this, but if we're thinking about just the British Isles here, there's two sides of the family. There is the Cue Celtic or Goidelic branch of the family, and that's where you see Irish and Scots Gaelic and Manx. And then you also have the P-Celtic or Brythonic side, which is that's where you'll find today Welsh, Breton, and Cornish. And that's why they call them P-Celtic or Q-Celtic, is because where in one side of that family you'll have a K sound like a K in English, in the other side, in that same word, instead of the K sound, you'll have a P sound, a P. All right, so for an instance, the word for head in Gaelic is ken, and in Welsh it's pen. All right, so so the Britons of Strathclyde spoke a P-Celtic language, very similar to the language that evolved later into modern Welsh and some of the other ones that I mentioned. Okay, so you have the Scots of Dal Riata, they speak Gaelic. You have the Britons of Strathclyde, and they speak an old some people refer to it as British, even though that word has a completely different meaning today. If we're talking about languages, the British language was the old Celtic language that was spoken throughout what's now England, Wales, and actually quite a lot of Scotland. Okay, so the Britons of Strathclyde, and what do they... I gave you kind of a rough description. So for those of you who do kind of... can think of Scotland in your head right now, or for those of you who are going to check those maps out, you'll be able to see the Britons of Strathclyde Kingdom on that. And that basically we're just talking about the very southwest of Scotland, okay? All right, and then if we're just going to go clockwise, the southeast of Scotland. So we're taking everything from the Firth of Forth, right? That's a big body of water that comes in from the east, from the North Sea, penetrates into Scotland, and Edinburgh sits on the south shore of the Firth of Forth, okay? So from there, that chunk of southeast Scotland, once upon a time, long time ago, was home of the Gododdin tribe, which was there's just a tribal difference between them and the Britons farther west, and there's other tribes we can get farther in the weeds on that, but at a very early date, that area was taken over by the Angles of Northumbria. All right, and I'm going to resist the temptation to go back further. I'm going to keep this super, super basic and not, like, I'm trying so hard not to get too far into the weeds here. The Angles of Northumbria, they spoke Old English or Anglo-Saxon, right? And if you think about today, that even the word English or England is named after them. It's Angolish. It's Angoland, right? So the Angles of Northumbria, and Northumbria wasn't the only Anglian kingdom in what is now England, but that's the one that we're dealing with as it comes to terms of what's now Scotland. They possessed that whole southeast portion, and they were Old English speakers. Okay, so that leaves the rest of Scotland, what's today Scotland. That was inhabited by a group of people known as Picts. Now, once upon a time, people viewed them as this mysterious, oh, and we don't know who they are, and they're the last holdouts of a pre-Indo-European speaking people, and okay, it's not so much like that. The scholars, the general consensus of scholars today is that they also spoke a pre-Celtic language. So something that was more close, it was a Celtic language, but it was more closely related to what the Britons of Strathclyde spoke than it was to what the Scots of Dalriada spoke. Now, with that said, Bede, the Venerable Bede, he was a monk that lived in the late 700s, so he lived at the same time that there were actually Picts. And he gives a kind of a foundational work that a lot of people have used as they've studied this era of English history, the ecclesiastical history of the English people. And he identifies the Pictish language as different from what the Britons were speaking. Okay, so yes, it was on that side of the linguistic Celtic family, but it was recognized as distinct from what would become Welsh. All right, and so that's they had the rest of Scotland, what's now Scotland. All right, so how do we get where we're at today with Scotland? Well, you had another group of people come on the scene. You had the Norse. Now, when I say Norse, that's a very vague general term. People like to do this is something that's inherent in human nature. We like to box things up in tidy little divisions. The trend was, and there is legitimacy to this trend, that those who came at the British Isles from the north through by the Shetland and Orkney Isles from that direction came down the west coast of Scotland and into the Irish Sea, hitting northern Scotland, western Scotland, and hitting then the whole western, what's now Wales, England, and all over Ireland. Those were generally coming from what's now Norway. But Norse is a general term that can refer to any Old Norse speaker, so that would include all of today's Danes, Swedes, Norwegians, Icelanders, Faroese. It would be all of them spoke Old Norse. And to get into when those divisions started happening between their current languages today, that's well beyond where I'm trying to get with this. Just know that the Vikings showed up. Yep, they were Vikings. Coming from mostly, as we're talking about Scotland, coming down from that northern direction, mostly from Norway. And I just told you they spoke Old Norse. All right, so they come through and they take over pretty big parts of Scotland from, let's first start off by talking about from the Picts. They take over land from the Picts. They occupy the Orkney and Shetland Islands. Those become power bases for Vikings. But they also controlled much of what's now Caithness in the very far north of Scotland, Caithness. And then they come down the west of Scotland. They controlled all of the Hebrides. So if you look at a map of Scotland, there's all these islands off the west coast. Not so much on the east coast, but a bunch of them off the west coast. And they take over all that. Now, in the very far northern of those isles, that would have been Picts that they were taking it over from. But as you move south, they were taking it over from the Scots of Dalriada. Well, if you have the royal center of the Scots of Dalriada in that territory, what happened? Well, the Scots of Dalriada, who had been intermarrying with the Picts, keep in mind all these groups are intermarrying with each other, to include the Vikings after they get set up there. They're intermarrying too. But in response to the Vikings at first, you see the Canal Gabran push east and set up their headquarters in Forteviot. Now, the first person that people usually point to as the king of both the Scots of Dal Riada and the Picts was a person named Kenneth MacAlpin. That's our English version of his name. Kenneth MacAlpin, in later histories, was saying, yeah, he was a Gaelic-speaking Scot from Dal Riada who was, had that kingdom, but then he violently took over or seized the throne or inherited from the maternal line the kingdom of the Picts. The problem with this, and if you want more information on this, if you want to take this subject and just dive into the ever-loving weeds on this, like super detail, study Alex Wolf. Also, Davit Brune. Davit Brune. They do a lot of work. And I'm sure there's other really good scholars on this area, but those are two I can think of off the top of my head who you can really get some good information from them. So Canal Gabran pushes east, and you have Kenneth MacAlpin, who becomes in 843, so we're right smack dab in the middle of the Viking Age right there, 843 AD. Kenneth MacAlpin becomes the king of Picts and Scots. Now, the problem that one of the problems that Alex Wolf points out is that this Kenneth MacAlpin, for the, him and two or three generations after him, they're referred to as kings of the Picts, not kings of the Scots or kings of Alba. After these two or three generations, then they start being referred to as the kings of Alba. And even then, that's the Gaelic word for Scotland today, but back then that didn't mean all of what's now Scotland. That was a very confined area. And so you have a joining of in one line, the joinings of this Canal Gabran and the Pictish royal family. And it's interesting that they are identified for a few generations as kings of Picts. So was Kenneth MacAlpin, was he a Gaelic-speaking Pict? I don't know. I'll let you study up more on that on your own. What about Canal Lorn? Right, you have this other clan, this other kindred, who was going back and forth with power in Dal Riada. What happened to them? Well, they went east too, but they went northeast up the Great Glen. So if you look at the back at the map of Scotland, you have the Murray Firth. That almost makes Scotland look like it has a shoulder. All right, big body of water that comes in to the north, and above that is Caithness. Below it is places like. So that at the very end of that shoulder would be Buchan. But farther inland, as that Murray Firth point penetrates and it gets close to where Inverness is now, that area, a pretty big geographical area, was called Murray. And I just finished reading a really interesting book. Let me share it with you. I just finished reading Outlaws of Medieval Scotland, Challenges of the Canmore Kings, 1058 to 1266, by R. Andrew MacDonald. And this gets into the period immediately after where we're talking about now, and this back and forth between the Kingdom of Murray, and he includes also, there's other threats, but a lot of the book talks about the rebellions of people from Murray against the kings of the Scots. And specifically the Canmore King. So if you're familiar with Macbeth, Malcolm Canmore, Malcolm III, is the one who ends up with the Scottish throne at the end of that story. So he was known as Malcolm Canmore, or it translates as Big Head, but I think maybe it meant Great Chief, to maybe give him the benefit of the doubt there. And his descendants for about 200 years had to deal with significant major uprisings from these other groups of people, and a lot of them are coming from the Kingdom of Murray. And what they suppose happened was, just like Canal Gabran pushed further east to get away from the Vikings, Canal Lorn pushed northeast up the Great Glen and to establish the leading kindred of what would become the Kingdom of Murray. And they're contesting the Canmore kings may have been trying to establish this back and forth sharing of the throne between these two kindreds. Macbeth, who the whole Shakespearean play is named after, represents this Canal Lorn kindred, rulers of Murray, who competed back and forth with the Scottish kings. And that, once again, that may have just been a continuation of the back and forth in Dalriada between Cenail Lorne and Cenail Gabhrain. All right, but that gets a little bit ahead, but I'm just trying to show you where that would have come out of, because it comes out of what we've been discussing this time period lately. And I'm not going to get too into that time period in this episode. I think I'm going to do one more episode, and I am going to get into that time period, because that time period that book just that I mentioned with that book, 1058 to 1266, a lot of the Scottish clans that we recognize today are coming out of the time period of the 1112, 1300s. Okay, so that I'll finish. That's where this will be a three-part episode, and that's where I'll finish next time. So, but before I wrap this one up today, we've talked about the Vikings coming on the scenes. The Vikings they contributed to the Scottish clans. Many major Scottish clans that you would recognize, and you might even have neighbors who have these names today, they have Norse names. Yeah, they're brought into the Gaelic-speaking world, but they continue to use these Norse, their names come from this Norse heritage, I guess would be the best way to say it. And these are names like MacLeod, like MacCaskill, like MacAulay, like MacCorcadale. So these are names all those names I just mentioned, linguistically, yeah, the Mac part of it's Gaelic, because once, like I said, they're brought into a Gaelic-speaking context. But the person that the kindred is named after had a Norse name. So we see that being influential in the development of what would become Scotland. Okay, so to kind of catch us up to where we're at now, we've got the Gaelic-speaking Scots of Dalriada, the Britons of Strathclyde, the Angles of Northumbria, the Picts, and then the incomers, the new guys on the block, the Vikings. And they were the toughest guys on the block for a while, right? After a while, there's always somebody who comes along that's tougher. That's just a rule of life. There's always somebody tougher. You see it in the boxing and UFC and all that. You might be the top dog for a while, but there's always somebody who comes along who is the next big thing. And all of these groups of people that made up, that occupied the territory of what is now called Scotland, all of them had conflict with Vikings. The Angles got hammered. In fact, Northumbria, their kingdom, was eventually either ruled, spent different periods of time being ruled over by one of their own, but who was a puppet for the Vikings, or an actual Dane or Norwegian. The Danes on the east side of Britain there, that was more, again, I want to emphasize, I'm just talking about trends here, but that was more people coming from Denmark, all right? In fact, the king of Denmark was at one time king over that area too. Anyway, so they had to handle the Vikings, the Britons of Strathclyde. Their fortress on Clyde Rock got laid, the Vikings from Ireland, based out of Ireland, because keep in mind, this is a few generations after they first showed up, and they've established themselves in Dublin, even though the name is a Gaelic word. I'm saying Gaelic because I'm talking about Ireland. That was a Viking establishment there. And that's where they had launched their raid into and attacked and laid siege to Clyde Rock, the seat of the Britons of Strathclyde. And they held out well for about 3 months, if I remember correctly. And then I think they ran out of water, was their deal. And then it went downhill fast after that. And they got hammered. But that didn't mean the end of the kingdom, though. The Britons of Strathclyde would hang on for centuries longer, at least a couple of centuries more. So the Dalriada Gaelic-speaking Scots, their leaders flee inland, and you see this fusion of the royal bloodline of the Picts and the Scots. But what about the rest of the kingdom? Every person who spoke Gaelic didn't flee the Vikings. The Vikings come in, and you have this hybridized group that become the later generations, we call them, they're the Gall Gaels. The Gaul in Gaelic means a foreigner, and Gaul was used in Gaelic to refer to the Vikings in many cases. Other words they used if you translated, calling them Gentiles because they were not Christian. Anyway, so you have the Gaelic speakers from the kingdom of Dalriada that are still there, But now that whole area is controlled by Scandinavians and eventually would become under, firmly under the control of the Norwegian throne. But you had this mixing of people out there. So the Gaelic that was spoken throughout the Hebrides, which is funny because that's where the stronghold of the language is today, is influenced by Old Norse. I think that's all the place names out there are heavily influenced by Old Norse. So and the groups, the kindreds that came from those area were a mix of these Scandinavians and the Gaels that lived there before. And it wasn't just the Hebrides, these isles off the west coast of Scotland that had that mix. It was also, if you're just to draw the line down the west coast, you land right in the southwest of Scotland in an area today called Galloway. And Galloway is named after, through a mutation of the word, these people, Gael, and I can't go into the details on it, but it ends up being Galloway. But that's where that word comes from, is this mixed group of people. Now, even though they were mixed group, their language became, the Gaelic language became dominant amongst these group of people. But they were from a mixed background. And what a fierce mix that is, isn't it? And then the reason I'm laying that up, so to give you further information on that, I did 2 or 3 episodes on the Galloglass, who come out of the Gael kindreds. Not exclusively, like I said, these hard lines that we like to draw. It was more complex than that, and there were other Scottish kindreds who contributed to the Galloglass movement. But generally speaking, these groups were coming from this mix, these kindreds that were a mix of the Gaels and the Scandinavians, okay? Now, the last group I want to mention before I wrap this up today is the Normans. The Normans are the last guys on the scene who contribute to a great degree to the people who would become what would make up the clans of Scotland. And very important clans of Scotland too, to include the ruling dynasty of Scotland, the Stuarts, can trace their roots back to the Normans. Now, I'm using Norman as kind of an umbrella term. For those of you who don't have really any knowledge of history, you had a succession crisis amongst the people who called themselves English. Now, keep in mind what unity they had between the different kingdoms in what is now England could have only been very recent, but you had the English king had died. There are different claimants to be his successor, but the one who in the end came out on top was William, Duke of Normandy, or William the Conqueror, or William the Bastard, depending on your perspective. He was the one that comes up with as the King of England, and there you have the Norman introduction into the Isle of Britain. Now, the Norman is, like I said, is an umbrella term. It includes the actual Normans, who were Vikings who had settled in northern France, intermarried with the locals, adopted French language and custom, and then pushed north into England and conquered there under William the Conqueror. But you had other groups who went with him. Amongst his ranks were included Flemish and also Bretons from northwestern France, in the area that to this day still retains a Celtic language related to. Now, within this group, you had other groups who were lumped in as Normans, but were actually very distinct groups, like the Flemish, like the Bretons up in from Brittany, the very northwestern peninsula of France. If you ever looked at a map there, you have this big peninsula that sticks out into the Atlantic Ocean, where a Celtic language is still spoken today. Now, that would be important for the development of the clans because certain groups would come from the Bretons, like the Stuarts or like the Elliots, and I've done episodes specifically on each one of those groups there. So that's important because the Bretons join with the Normans. In fact, the Normans had quite a few Bretons fighting with them and move into England at this time. But yeah, you also have Flemish people, and that's important too because, well, from the Bretons, you get the Elliots and the Stuarts, like I said, but then from the Flemish, at least one group, but a major group they were amongst the Scottish clans, you have the Sutherlands and the Murrays that come out of that and possibly the Douglases. I've seen different theories on that, but and all three of those groups, Douglases were a big, huge deal in Scotland. So were the Sutherlands. So were the Murrays. All these become very powerful kindreds within Scotland later on. So all this is important. These are the last group that significantly contribute to the development of the Scottish clans. And so when was this? The Battle of Hastings was 1066. So we're looking at right at the end of the Viking Age. The Vikings have already been throughout the British Isles, but specifically in Scotland for a couple hundred years. Well, about 250 years before this. Because the first we see the Viking in records of the Viking activity in the British Isles is the 790s. And so 1066, there's other cool stories I could tell off of that, but I'm trying to keep this pretty streamlined and pretty basic. So we've wrapped up covering the four original, I guess you could call them, even though you could see even amongst them, the Angles of Northumbria were later comers. But you had those four groups, the Britons of Strathclyde, the Scots of Dalriada, the Angles of Northumbria, and the Picts. Then we talked about the Vikings coming in and what parts of the territory they controlled, and I just told you when about they were introduced into the scene. Then in 1066, you had the Normans moving into England. Now, and I pointed this out in previous episodes before, and I'll just add this one little detail. The Normans moving into England, that was by violent takeover. Their introduction into Scotland was a completely different story. And I've talked more about that in previous episodes. In fact, you could probably, I believe that I discussed in my foundational baseline episodes at the very beginning of when I first started this podcast. I talked about the Vikings and Normans in the same, but they had their own episode, the Vikings and the Normans. And they were, like I said, the Normans were just Vikings a few generations removed. They came into Scotland peacefully, invited by the Scottish kings. The first Scottish king that we have on record is really developing that trend was David I. And then you have others of that same Canmore dynasty that were very friendly with Normans. And under the Canmore kings, the Normans had a great time. They did really well in Scotland. Now, I will dive more into that in the next episode of how that gets going, but we see a lot of not just the Stuarts or the Elliots or the Sutherlands and the Murrays and maybe Douglases, but we get into with the Normans. They contributed quite a lot to the Scottish clans. They did. If we went down a list of major Scottish clans, the ones with a Norman name would figure prominently in that list, all right? So, but I think that's as far as I'm going to get into it today. I took a little bit longer than I wanted to. I had to do some preliminary stuff there at the beginning, but hopefully that was time well spent. And hopefully this was to just tell you who the Scottish clans come from and how does this develop in a timeline, right? So that hopefully I laid that out well for you. And in the next episode, my goal there, I have already done an episode where I said, you know where I see most of the Scottish clans originating is in this time period, and I talk a little bit about it, but my goal was to talk about the specific kindreds and when they started rather than to develop the historical context which they came out of, and that'll be the goal of the next episode. So hopefully you're there with me. Hopefully I haven't said anything today that was just an absolute deal breaker for you. And hopefully it was informative to you, and hopefully you get a better structure around which to bring in more information, which you will get if you continue to listen to this. So I've got that plan for next time. Before I actually sign off, I'd like to invite you to share this podcast. I'm pretty sure every platform that I've seen that you can listen to a podcast on has a share button on it. Share this with somebody you think you'd be interested in. Also, take part in the dialogue. The dialogue is getting more and more developed as people are continuing to contribute. They're posting links to this article or that they found was interesting. They're asking questions, and sometimes I answer, but other times we get other people, part of our community, that take care of it and do a great job. And I'm really pleased with what we were starting to get going there. And this doesn't happen by me just being the talking head. And that's not my intent to do that anyway. So thank you so much for those of you who have taken that challenge and that invitation to share the podcast or to contribute to the dialogue in there. If you want to give me any feedback, and to the gentleman that I mentioned at the beginning of this who criticized me, to give him credit, he was not hateful about it. And he was not, he was not dirty or hateful. He was disparaging and negative, but I think generally we kept the discourse pretty civil. So that's a credit to him, I believe. Anyway, thank you for joining me. And until the next episode, Marschen Lev Andrasta.